Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.
Shrink Wrap Radio number 165, Irritable Male Syndrome, July 25th, 2008. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
Major thing that we found was that depression and irritability are related. 21% of the men said they were depressed, often or almost always, high levels of depression, and that we're actually seeing this irritability and anger, you know, rather than being an indication that they're just, you know, crotchety old men or irritable old men, is that, you know, there's often, this is the way that men experience depression. You know, different from women, women often will experience depression as sadness, as crying, as, you know, feeling, you know, just unhappy with life and unhappy with the world. The way that men often express their depression is, I describe it, we act it out.
That was the voice of my guest, Dr. Jed Diamond. Jed Diamond, Ph.D., has been a licensed psychotherapist for over 43 years and is the author of 7 books, including the internationally best-selling Male Menopause and Surviving Male Menopause, that has thus far been translated into 32 foreign languages, and the recently released The Irritable Male Syndrome, Understanding and Managing the 4 Key Causes of Depression and Aggression, which is also developing a worldwide readership. Jed is director of The Men Alive, a health program that helps men live long and well. Though focused on men's health, Men Alive is also for women who care about the health of the men in their lives. Since its inception in 1992, Jed has been on the board of advisors of the Men's Health Network. He's also a member of the International Society for the Study of the Aging Male and serves as a member of the International Scientific Board of the World Congress on Men's Health. Now, here's the interview. Dr. Jed Diamond, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Glad to be with you.
Your first book was titled Male Menopause, and your more recent one is on what you call irritable male syndrome. And I have to say, I read the latter with some trepidation, wondering to what extent I might find myself on every page.
I think that's the experience many, many of us have. I've found that to be true after doing the research for male menopause and finding out how much irritability and anger, irritation there was in men, particularly at midlife. I found that this was an area that really touched the lives of a whole lot of men, as well as the women that interact with us, love us, and live with us.
Yeah, I'm not sure any of us, I don't know if any of us escape. It's kind of like what they call, when I taught abnormal psychology, I know there's always that issue of, I think it's called medical student syndrome, where when people are going through medical school, they feel like they have all the symptoms of all the diseases they
right.
study. Well, let's start with the notion of male menopause. We know that women go through hormonal changes that lead to very observable, you know, physiological changes. Are you saying that men go through similar hormonal changes, or are you speaking more metaphorically?
Well, we used to think that this was more of a metaphorical, you know, men have a midlife crisis or go through something that might be like what women go through. But what we found increasingly with the research that's been going on throughout the world over the last 25 years or so is that men, like women, have a hormonally based change of life that has to do with dropping hormonal levels, particularly testosterone, that begin to happen for some men as early as 35, for others as late as 65. But this hormonal change really affects men in similar ways than it does with women. And so although the term itself, male menopause, is not technically accurate. Men don't have a menstrual cycle, so obviously don't stop having one. And yet the hormonally based changes that affect our psychological state, our emotional state, our sexuality, really is similar enough to what I think women go through that the term has caught on and really has been recognized now throughout the world.
Wow. And women, I know, sometimes treat symptoms by taking some hormones. Are there, I know you're not a physician, but are there any hormones or drugs or medical treatments that men can resort to?
Well, I generally recommend for men and women that they start with the things that we know affect our hormones, our emotions, you know, our diet, exercise, the level of stress in our lives, how we're interacting in our personal and interpersonal relationships. But we also find that for some men, as true for women, hormonal changes are so dramatic and in some cases the effects so serious that hormone restoration is something that men are considering in the same way that women have been doing for years. And for men, testosterone is the main hormone that men often lose at this age. And a significant number of men are going to their doctors and getting, if they need it, testosterone restoration to bring their hormone levels back up to a level that they were experiencing when their sexuality was at a younger age, the way their body felt was when they were in their 20s and 30s. And for many men, they're finding this a very important alternative to just going on business as usual, feeling their sexuality, their vitality, their energy level just drifting away.
Fascinating. Now, your most recent book is titled Irritable Male Syndrome, and perhaps we should start out by having you define irritable male syndrome, or what you abbreviate as IMS.
Right. Well, just to give you a little background on this, what I found when I was doing the research for male menopause was that although many clinicians were focused on sexual symptoms, male sexual dysfunction, erectile dysfunction, loss of sexual desire, we were seeing these in our study sample, but we were also seeing a real high level of irritability and anger. And so this really led to my further research that we cited in the book, Irritable Male Syndrome. And in that I defined irritable male syndrome as a state of hypersensitivity, anxiety, frustration, and anger that occurs in males and is associated with biochemical changes, hormonal fluctuations, stress, and loss of male identity. So that encompasses, all, you know, in a short sentence, a whole lot of both symptoms and causes that our research that we were conducting on nearly 30,000 males throughout the world allowed us an insight into what's going on with men throughout our lives, and particularly at midlife.
Well, you've just spoken to two of the questions that I had here, which is to ask you what you meant when you said IMS is a multidimensional problem, but you just went through it. You point out that it's hormonal, it's physical, psychological, emotional, interpersonal, economic, social, sexual, and spiritual. And then I was going to ask you about the four core symptoms, and I think you just mentioned those as hypersensitivity, anxiety, frustration, and anger. One of the things I really appreciate about your book is that you are very open about your own story, which I guess is how you got into exploring these issues in the first place. And you weave various elements of your story throughout the book. Perhaps you can share some of that background now.
Well, yeah, I've been a psychotherapist and worked with men and the women that love them really going on, 43 years now. And as is true, I think for many psychotherapists in the field, we're certainly not immune to the problems that we try to address in others. And I was finding, as my wife was going through menopause, and she was experiencing various symptoms of loss of sexual desire and irritability and anger. I focused on her. You know, if only she could get her life together and get her symptoms under control, things would improve. And what I found, to my dismay, was that as things got better for her, I found that a lot of the symptoms that I was seeing in her were there in me. I say I found it out. She pointed it out to me, and over many, many months, I had to admit that, you know, this was true for me. And I have a colleague, Kay Redfield Jamison, who is one of the world's experts on depression and bipolar illness, and she wrote in her book a little sentence that just really struck home for me. She said, as she was experiencing some of these symptoms, she said, "You're irritable and paranoid and humorless and lifeless and critical and demanding, and no reassurance is ever enough. You're frightened and you're frightening, and you're not at all like yourself, but you will be soon, but you know you won't." I read that, and I said, wow, she's talking about me.
Wow.
And as I then began to, you know, research this in more depth, I found that there were thousands, millions of men throughout the world that were going through these changes that come across as angry and blaming and irritable. And what they really are at core are these symptoms that relate to these multi-dimensional change of life that so many of us are going through.
Wow, that's very, very interesting. Now, you note that the medical community is notoriously slow in recognizing new problems. What's been the response of, if any, of the medical community to IMS?
Well, it's been, I think, true of many problems that we see in medicine, is that at first it's ignored, and then when it comes on the radar screen, you tend to be ridiculed, and I get letters from some doctors of, oh, this is silly, you're inventing, you know, another medical problem for a simple life change. And then over time, you know, the medical community, you know, has become much more accepting, and I get letters, as I did from Jean Bonhomme, who's MD and the head and board of advisors of the Men's Health Network, and also the president of the National Black Men's Health Network. And he said to call the irritable male syndrome a milestone is an understatement. Jed Diamond is bringing out into the open an almost universal but seldom considered fact. In a culture where men aren't supposed to cry, male depression, anxiety, and physical health challenges are often expressed in unconventional and difficult-to-recognize ways. So he's recognizing, and I've gotten now hundreds of letters from doctors and healthcare professionals from all over the world that are recognizing this. They're sending their clients to my website where they can actually take the quiz that we used for the research, and they can, it scores it for them. It'll tell them, you know, where they fit in terms of now 60,000 men that have taken the quiz, as well as women that take the quiz to see if they can better understand their men. And it really gives men a basis for going, you know, if this is a problem, I want to see it, I want to know it, because we know now that there are so many things that a man can do to change this so that his relationships don't suffer, his health doesn't suffer, and he can really have the kind of long-term happiness and health that so many men, you know, really want as we get older.
What is that website if somebody wanted to take that test that you just referred to?
Well, I have people just go to my website that's called menalive.com, menalive.com, and there's a whole number of informational links there, including the one that says take the quiz. And that'll then take you to the quiz page, and you go through it. You just, you know, takes about 5 minutes to do, and at the end of that, it tells you where you are, what your score is, whether there's any indication of irritable male syndrome, and then offers for those that have a problem the various help options that are available.
Okay. Now, in one place, you say that IMS is ultimately about violence, and that seems like a very strong indictment. What leads you to say that?
Well, in the public health view of violence, I mean, the common view of violence, we think of, you know, other people, certainly not the average guy, you know, killing people, beating up on people. But in the World Health Organization looks at violence as not just these extreme forms of violence, but violence which, you know, is anger turned both outward as it expresses itself on others and turned inward where we're really feeling down, depressed. And at its extremes, this kind of, you know, anger turned outward can lead to, you know, fights in the home, to yelling and screaming, and can actually lead to, you know, physical violence. Turned inward, we know that it can lead to unhappiness, depression, and in too many men, suicide. And this is something that has been kind of an area of research of mine over the last 10 or 15 years, is to really help prevent the high suicide rates that we see that escalates in men, particularly as men get older. We find the rates in men are always higher than women, but as men get older, the rates go from 5 times higher for men than women in men's 50s, to 7 times higher in our 60s, to 8 times higher in our 70s. To the time we get to our 80s, the suicide rate for men is 15 times higher for men in their 80s than it is for women in their 80s. So we're seeing that in a sense, suicide is really a predominantly male problem, and that it gets worse and worse as we get older.
Wow, I didn't know that. And why do you think it gets worse and worse when we get older?
Well, I think there's a number of factors. You know, as men age, you know, our productivity in the workforce, you know, is more challenged. You know, we're living in an age where the economic system is changing and in some ways collapsing. And I think this impacts men more strongly than it does many women, because so many of us have our whole identity wrapped up in our work. That's first of all. Second of all, I think men tend to be more isolated than women, particularly as we get older. Mm-hmm. We don't have the close friendships. We don't have the, you know, the camaraderie where we can talk deeply about what's going on in our lives. You know, we may talk about sports, or we may talk about, you know, the latest political candidates' problems. But rarely do men talk about the personal things, our fears, our hopes, our dreams. And so I think many men, as they get older, feel isolated from each other. And I think the final thing is that men increasingly feel that their sense of value is undermined, where it used to be that, you know, the older man was revered and seen as a source of wisdom and support. And now the older man is seen as superfluous, as not necessary, as being somebody who's a source of ridicule and laughter in some cases. And I think you put all these things together, and it leaves many men feeling hopeless, feeling unnecessary, undervalued. And as a result, not only do we lose too many men before their time, we lose too many fathers that could be in supportive of their sons and their grandsons and their granddaughters. And this is a major tragedy that we see throughout the world.
One of the things relevant to this is you point out that depression is underdiagnosed in men. Generally, depression is reported as being higher in women.
Exactly. I just completed a major research study that really changed our view of how depression is understood throughout the world. Up until now, most of the world literature has indicated that that women suffer depression at twice the rate of males. And then you think about, well, how do we know whether somebody's depressed? We don't give them a blood test and test their blood and say, yep, you know, they have depressed blood, or we don't, you know, take brain fluid and say, yes, they're depressed. We ask them questions. And clearly, if we're not asking the right questions, we're not going to get the right answers. We're not going to get an accurate diagnosis. And for years, I've been saying that we need questions that are related to irritability and anger and drinking, alcoholism, and other forms of acting out behavior that often aren't asked in traditional depression scales. And I've developed a whole new scale called the Diamond Depression Scale that really looks at these more male-oriented ways of dealing with depression. We've done a major three-year research study now with, again, about 1,000 men participating from around the world. And we now know much more accurately how we can better diagnose depression in men. And we're now able to, I think, offer men the support they need and the treatment that many of them need. And I think the result is we're going to save, you know, thousands and maybe even millions of lives in the future.
Well, that's great. We went through a period of women's lib in which a lot of anger toward men surfaced. And you have a section titled Us and Them, Why Are Men So Angry at Women? Are men generally angry at women? And if so, why?
Well, I think there's a number of reasons. Some of it is that response to, you know, the so many years in which, not all, but many women who I think had a mistaken view of women's liberation, saying, you know, if we have a problem and we're, you know, underpaid or undervalued, then men must be the ones that are getting the goodies. They're getting the result. And that isn't true. I mean, the fact that many women have suffered doesn't mean that men have been getting all the benefits that women have lacked. So I think men are angry at women because they were misunderstood and misperceived. And in some way, I think we all share this feeling that we're part of an economic system that in some ways is geared towards supporting people at the top that make a whole lot of money and get a whole lot of benefit. And more people, I think, feel excluded from that system. As a result, I think both men and women are undervalued and underpaid and, you know, are feeling an economic crunch. And when we feel that, often there's a tendency to look at, well, who's to blame for this? And I think mistakenly many men blame women. You know, there seem to be a lot more women in the workforce. Many women seem to be doing well. And so they think, well, if women are doing well, maybe they're the cause of why we're not doing so well. I think the real culprit, you know, is an economic system that's really geared towards making money for a few at the expense of the many. And it's that larger economic system that I think needs to change so that both men and women can feel that, you know, they're able to find jobs, they're able to keep jobs, they're able to support themselves and their families in a way that all of us want to feel that we're contributing for everybody's well-being. And I think that's what we're all of us looking forward to in the future.
What about the emotional dependence of men on women as a contributor to that anger? I think we men tend to think of ourselves as very independent, but in fact we're unconsciously very dependent on women.
I think definitely an important factor is that, you know, when we feel in some ways over the years women have felt economically dependent on males and they've move now towards more economic independence. And I think, as you point out, men have felt emotionally dependent on women and now feel that they are vulnerable to losing the connection that they have. It's why one of the recommendations that I have with men is that men get involved in a men's group. Men spread out their emotional support so that, You know, I've done studies on men, and almost without exception, in large groups of men, men will tell you they don't have anybody who they feel really they're close to and understands them. If they do have somebody, it's almost always the woman in their life, and that's their primary support. So if that isn't going well, if there's some stress, the man has nobody in his life that really knows him and supports him. So I think one of the antidotes to that, you know, I myself have been in a men's group that's been meeting regularly for almost 30 years, and both my wife and I attribute a lot of the success of our relationship to the fact that I've been in a men's group all these years, and actually she's been in a women's group as well. And I think we both need, and I think men need support of other men, and women need the support of other women. And I think, tragically, you know, we don't get enough of that, particularly in the life of men. So I think as men get support from other men, it allows us to have a broader base of support in our lives, so we're not so emotionally dependent and so emotionally demanding on the women in our lives.
Well, I certainly echo that. I've been in a men's group meeting regularly for 20 years, and I thought that was a long time, but your 30 years trumps that.
Yeah, we've been doing it a long time.
Wow. Now, you mentioned earlier this IMS survey questionnaire, and I think there are pieces of it in the book as well. And you say at this point 60,000 men have taken it, men and women. What are the most salient findings that leap out at you from that survey?
Well, there have been a number that we've recognized over the years since I've been doing this. One is just how valuable a tool it is for men. What men will tell me is that for years they had been hearing from women in their lives that that you're acting kind of irritable. You may have a problem, and he would deny it. Now I think she's just trying to lay her problem on me. Men tell me once they take the quiz and they can really see where they rate in terms not of what their woman tells them, but in terms of all the other men that have taken this. And the response is they recognize often for the first time that they do have problems and that's something that can be dealt with. Some of the other things that have emerged is the level of stress that men experience in their lives. In the first evaluation we did, we found that only 8% of the men said they were never stressed. 92% are feeling some stress, and in fact, 46% said that they're almost always under stress. We found also that sex is a major concern for the men, that 40% of the men said that they're almost never sexually satisfied, that sex is a problem in their lives. The third major thing that we found was that depression and irritability are related. 21% of the men said they were depressed, often or almost always, high levels of depression, and that we're actually seeing this irritability and anger, rather than being an indication that they're just, crotchety old men or irritable old men, is that, there's often, this is the way that men experience depression. Different from women, women often will experience depression as sadness, as crying, as, feeling, just unhappy with life and unhappy with the world. The way that men often express their depression is, I describe it, we act it out. We push it outside. We express it as irritability and anger and upset. And the research is validating, this way of understanding. And it just gives a lot more hope for what we as clinicians can do and what men can do for themselves and what women can do in helping the men in their lives.
Clearly, IMS is tough on relationships with all this irritability and anger and violence and so on. You cite the work of Dr. John Gottman, who I hope to interview at some point, and who's done extensive research on marital relationships. And drawing on his work, you cite criticism, contempt, defensiveness, and stonewalling as the red alerts of impending IMS damage. Maybe you can briefly take us through each of these terms in terms of how they manifest in relationships.
Well, again, this is, things that we had recognized, from the research that we were doing, is often when a man is hurting, the first thing that starts happening is a defensiveness that comes up, where, in a sense, our guard goes up. We feel, we got to defend ourselves. I don't have a problem. You have a problem. There's a lot of defensiveness that goes on. And then if we're still not getting connected and we're still not understanding what's going on, then we start getting blaming. We start, saying, you're wrong. We start name calling. If, again, we don't get enough support at that level, that's another red flag. Then there's a level of contempt that comes in, and you hear that in you know, the terms that, you know, I'll often hear. I was talking to a man today where he's becoming so enraged with his partner that now, rather than seeing her as a loving, caring person, which is how he saw her when they first got together, now he sees her as almost a caricature of the Wicked Witch of the West. You know, only he calls her, you know, other names that are, you know, even, you know, we all know those names. But the mindset that sees the other person now as an enemy rather than a friend is part of, you know, the red flag. And then finally, you know, the stonewalling, you know, as he describes, as Gottman describes, where, you know, you ask the guy, well, what's wrong? Nothing. You know, you seem upset today. No, I'm not. There's this, in a sense, wall that comes down where he doesn't want to talk anymore. He doesn't want to interact. And these then are, you know, the increasing red flags that tell us all, man, if we don't deal with these things, the next stop is the divorce courts.
Well, talking about stonewalling as the most serious of the red flags, this part really interested me, especially your discussion of the underlying physiology of men. This really helped me to understand myself. As men, we think of ourselves as the emotionally tough ones. We don't cry and so on. But you say we're actually more reactive, subject to flooding. Can you say a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, again, the traditional way of viewing men's emotions is that we're tough. We can take it. It's women that are the emotional ones. You know, they cry at the drop of the hat. Everything bothers them. And this was the idea until we actually developed better measuring techniques. And we found that it was actually men who, in emotional situations, physiologically become overwhelmed. You know, we can actually measure the degree into which the body and mind are feeling, you know, flooded is, a good description of it, where you're just feeling, you know, so overwhelmed with emotions. The way you deal with it is you shut down. You turn down the emotions, not because, as some, you know, see, the man is insensitive, but in fact he's oversensitive. He's too sensitive. He's feeling overwhelmed by emotions, and so rather than break down, he goes, I'm not feeling anything. I have to shut this down. If the man begins to recognize that, rather than seeing himself as uninvolved, he begins to see the truth of it is he's overly involved. He cares too much. He's feeling overwhelmed by the emotions. Same thing with the woman. If she can recognize, you know, his withdrawal or his stonewalling or his unwillingness to talk is not an indication that he just doesn't care, but that he may be overwhelmed, then you can do a whole different way of interacting that can help both partners be able to understand what's going on and better support each other, where she can go, hey, hon, why don't you just take a break? And, you know, we do this therapeutically, you know, take 5-minute break and then let's talk. And often, you know, when he's not so overwhelmed and flooded, he can then talk rather than what often happens where, you know, she'll say, come on, talk. What's going on? What's happening? And he gets more flooded and gets more withdrawn. And finally, he either explodes or he just gets in his car, drives away, and you don't see him for 3 days.
Amen, brother. You're talking to me.
All of us, and we recognize now from studies that this is true for all men to some degree. We all have this physiology where we get strongly overwhelmed by emotions and don't even know that we're being overwhelmed.
Yeah.
That's the tragedy. We don't even know the emotions are just rampant. We just think, I've had the experience, my wife said, what's the matter? And I just feel numb. I just don't feel anything. Well, I did feel something earlier. I felt anger. I felt irritable. I felt hurt. I felt scared. But having felt overwhelmed by the emotions and men not being comfortable with emotions or feeling they're unmanly, we eventually turn them off, and then we do feel numb.
Yeah, and I'm interested in the age dimension as well, because, you know, given the title of your first book, Male Menopause, that kind of directs attention towards the middle age spectrum. But it seems like we're not just talking about middle-aged men here.
Well, we're not. We found, you know, in the studies that there were actually two major times where irritable male syndrome was most prevalent. We found one peak for young men between the ages of 14 and say 26, and it makes sense when you see the hormonal component. It's when testosterone is coming online and increasing, and you have this emotional volatility and hormonal volatility. And the other major peak was men at midlife, you know, generally between 40 and 55, where, again, the hormones are dropping. The third area we found was that men of all ages, both earlier and in between and later than these age ranges, who are under a lot of stress, will experience some of the symptoms of irritable male syndrome. So where I see it is in younger men, older men, and then men under a whole lot of stress, which often, as you point out at the beginning of the interview, often includes all of us at some point in our lifespan.
Yes. So I know that you've got to be running along. There's a lot more topics here that we could cover. But as we begin to wind down, what's your recommendation for the male listener who thinks he might be suffering from IMS?
Well, what I found, again, over the years is the simplest thing, you know, it's free. It doesn't cost anything. You know, you go to the website, you click on the quiz link. It takes you to the quiz page. You simply, you know, go down the symptoms and say, is this true for me? None of the time, some of the time, a lot of the time. And then by the time you get to the end, it gives you a score, and it tells you where you are in relation to other men. To me, that's the simplest, most helpful, and based on the hundreds of letters that I get every day from men, they say, this was the most enlightening thing I've ever, you know, experienced. And it really put in perspective what's going on and gave me a numerical score that I know is scientifically accurate and sound and not something that's made up. And it helped me then guide me into whether this is something that I should just monitor and watch, whether it's something that I shouldn't be concerned about, I can just let go, or something that I really need to pay attention to and to get some help, you know, with immediately. So that's probably the simplest, most direct entree into this that I think I found that I would offer to, you know, the men in your audience that might be concerned or just interested to see where they fit on this continuum.
How about for the women in the audience or for the wife who thinks her husband might be suffering from IMS?
Well, what the women have told me is that one of the characteristics of irritable male syndrome is generally denial. You know, the men, remember, they're irritable, they're angry, they're blaming. You know, and I remember this stage with myself where if a woman told me I might have a problem, I'd say, no, I do not. So one of the things that women have told me is they'll take the quiz as they see their husband and will approach him in this way. They'll say, you know, I've been, you know, learn about this thing, irritable male syndrome. I took the quiz and I scored, you know, and as I saw you, whatever, 60, 70. I'm probably wrong. I'm probably way off, you know. Why don't you just take it and, you know, and see, you know, we'll get a more accurate view. So it kind of cuts through the denial, and rather than say, look, you know, you got a problem, I've found it, you know, you say, look, I may be wrong. I took the quiz. You know, why don't you check it out? And I've had many women say, you know, once he took it for himself, it broke through a lot of the denial. Sometimes it takes longer. You know, I have actually a whole counseling program that I've set up for women that I can help guide them to how do they get through to the man? How do they approach him in a way that he's more likely to listen? Simplest way is to take the quiz and encourage him to check it out himself. If that doesn't work, then, you know, some counseling can be helpful. I often start with the woman, and, you know, once she gets involved, then I help her find ways to get the man involved. And then often when they're both involved, then things become much easier, and a lot of the problems that were affecting them both get dealt with much more effectively.
Okay, well, before we wrap this up, is there anything that you would like to say that you haven't had a chance to say?
Well, I think two things. I think the one thing I recognize is that based on the research that I'm getting, the letters that I'm getting, the feedback from men and women all over the world, I know this is a major problem for a whole lot of people. So if you're listening and you feel this may be true for you, know that you're not alone. Secondly, what we've discovered is there's a whole lot of things that we can do that are helpful. Everything from changing your diet that can help this, to exercise, to stress reduction techniques, to simple hormone, you know, boosters that you can do. So the good news is that there are a whole lot of easy things and inexpensive things and supportive things you can do. And the reason to do it is not only it'll make you feel better, but nobody wants to go through the stresses of a relationship that's coming apart. It's not good for the man, it's not good for the woman, it's not good for the children in their home, and it doesn't have to be this way. So I hope if this resonates with, you know, people in the audience that they'll, you know, get on the website, check it out, and do something about it if it is a problem in your life.
Well, this seems like a really important contribution to me, and I certainly thank you for it. And Dr. Jed Diamond, thanks so much for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
My pleasure. I hope to be on with you again sometime.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Dr. Jed Diamond. We had a devil of a time getting this recording together. As you know, I use Skype for recording folks that I'm not able to interview in person, which is most of them. And sometimes Skype is better than others. On this particular morning, I kept hearing an occasional but very distracting echo of my own voice. So I kept hanging up and calling him back, hoping for a better connection. Then I got the idea of trying Gizmo, which is like Skype, and which I hadn't used in a long time. Then I found I had to buy call-out credits on Gizmo using PayPal, so I quickly used my PayPal account to buy the credits, but then the credit kept not showing up in the Gizmo account. I guess it takes time to process. And I was working on a tight timeline because I knew that Jed had to leave within the hour, and that if we rescheduled, it would have to be put off for a week or so due to his busy schedule. Finally, at the last moment, I got the bright idea of using a conference call service that I use in my consulting work. So we both called into the conference service number, and that's what you heard here. I still use Skype on my end because I wanted to capture it digitally rather than having to pay extra to the conferencing service for the recording. And I thought I was hearing a little bit of echo, but as I listened back to the recording, it seems to be clean, although not of the usual high quality that I've been getting lately. Anyway, it was a close call, and my hat's off to Jed for putting up with all of this and not getting triggered into irritable male syndrome. I guess I'm the classical case of the male in denial because my wife tells me I'm getting more irritable and grumpy, and I'm not seeing it. I'm in resistance, but I will try to be more aware. This is a heck of a book, and I strongly recommend it if you're at all interested in any of the issues that you heard us discuss. The book is packed with factual information, lots of case vignettes, and an amazing amount of very frank self-disclosure by Jed. I think he's made a really important contribution.
I've been laying on this couch, babe. I've been laying here so long. Just waiting for Dr. Dave, babe, to play his shrink wrap radio song. Oh, he plays it so sweet and he plays it so warm. Shrink wrap radio, it's a harbor from the storm. You know he speaks to your mind, babe, but he's really speaking to your soul. Talking shrink wrap radio, babe. You know that's just the way that he rolls. At the end of the day, you know what you'll find. Like Dr. Dave said, it's all in your mind.
Well, you can give credit to Sarah Hannah Radcliffe for inspiring me to produce yet another shrink wrap jingle. You might recall that she recently wrote saying how much she likes the various shrink wrap music, and so that inspired me to go after this latest production with the help of Jeff Smith, of course. Hey, did you know that we have a Shrink Wrap Radio fan club on Facebook? It was created by Susie S., a longtime listener, who's gotten so busy in school and her life that she just hasn't had any time to maintain it, and she's ready to give it up. And now, I know next to nothing about using Facebook myself. We really need a Shrink Wrap Radio Fan Club Facebook moderator, somebody who will try to keep a little chatter going there, liven it up in any ways possible. I'm just terrible at this social networking stuff. My energy is so totally focused on getting out all these podcasts, lining up guests, and so on. Plus, I'm running a market research consulting business. It just doesn't leave me with a lot of time for social networking. I have some of you following me on Twitter, and I keep forgetting to tweet. Do you really want to know what movie I last saw? So if you want to take over as Shrink Wrap Radio Fan Club moderator on Facebook, just drop me a line and let me know. Meanwhile, all you Facebook people can find it and contribute. Just go onto Facebook and do a search on Shrink Wrap Radio, and you'll find the link to it. If you haven't had a chance to do so, you might want to listen to my interview with Dr. Judith Beck on my other podcast at wisecounselpodcast.com. She's the daughter of Aaron Beck, the famous founder of cognitive therapy, and she's taken over as director of the Cognitive Therapy Institute, which he established. Now, I know many of you are bloggers. How about making a donation to Shrink Wrap Radio and advertising your blog at the same time? You can do it through the Top Spots widget on our site. I want to thank the folks who've made a PayPal donation of $20 through our Top Spots widget on our site. Be sure to check them out. Just go to shrinkwrapradio.com and look at the top right-hand side of the page. Remember, there are now typed transcripts for many of our shows. Just look at the transcripts menu on our Shrink Wrap Radio site. You'll be amazed. Let me know if you're finding these of value. They're due to the ongoing efforts of our volunteers. Won't you consider joining them? Just drop me an email if you'd like to help out in that way. And as always, the sponsors for the show are Mevio and GoDaddy. You can check out all of our GoDaddy discount codes on our site at shrinkwrapradio.com. For example, using the code SHRINK3 at checkout will get you a 10% discount on any domain names you purchase, and we get, I think, a dollar or two to help support Shrink Wrap Radio. So thanks for your help.
Hi, my name is Judy from County Cork, and you're on the couch with Dr. Dave.
Please be sure to send in your own on-the-couch voice transitions from wherever you are in the world. I need some new ones. Now on to some listener emails. The first one comes from a longtime listener who will remain anonymous on this one for obvious reasons. Dear Dr. Dave, I just listened to the Dr. Marsha Linehan interview on your Wise Counsel podcast. Very interesting approach to dealing with an incredibly difficult-to-treat psychological disorder. What I found intriguing is that her approach in the macro was at least in part my intuitive approach to dealing with my ex-wife, who I am convinced suffers from bipolar disorder. When I was married to her, I knew something was wrong with her, but never could quite put my finger on what it was. It wasn't until a couple of years after we divorced that I came to the realization, through the observation of a friend who is a psychologist, that she most likely suffered from bipolar disorder. I actually wrote a paper for one of my psych classes on bipolar disorder and framed it within the context of my personal experience of living with someone who suffers from the disorder and in turn makes everyone else suffer for their problem. I believe the key in successful treatment has to begin by bringing the subject into agreement in a non-threatening or judgmental way that there is a problem at the core of self in interpreting and responding to life events in a non-maladaptive way. From there, there is hope in helping the subject navigate through the web of delusion and destructive behaviors to a life that can become on some level purpose-filled and meaningful. My children and I have paid dearly for my ex-wife's increasingly awful and destructive behavior. It's good to know that there are scientists and clinicians who have pressed on to find ways to reach those with difficult disorders like bipolar disorder in the face of declarations like untreatable. Great show. Keep it up, Doc. Thanks for sharing that personal experience, and perhaps it will be helpful to some other listeners out there. And I certainly agree with your observation of the importance of those researchers and clinicians who have the courage to continue to explore how to treat these very challenging disorders. Next, we hear from Jennifer Linton, who we've heard from a long time ago in the past several times and haven't heard from in a long time. She lives up in Canada, and she writes, "Hi, Dr. Dave. I just wanted to drop you a quick note to express my continued interest and enjoyment of your Shrink Wrap Radio podcast. I am continually impressed by the high caliber of fascinating guests that your podcast offers. Many kudos. Let me update you as to what has been happening in my life. In May of 2007, I gave birth to my second son, Nigel, and have been home full-time caring for my two children since that time. As a result, I've not had a great deal of opportunity to listen to your podcast. Fortunately, things have settled down, and I'm finding more time to work in my studio, where I tend to do the majority of my podcast listening. I've been slowly catching up with your past shows, the last one being your program on the psychology of second life." By the way, her reference to studio is the fact that Jennifer is an artist. She goes on to say, "I'm nearing completion of a new series of drawings that I think you'll find interesting. As with much of my work, it has a strong psychological component. Check out my Alphabet of Anxieties and Desires." And she gives her website, and I invite you all to take a look. It's at www.jenniferlinton.ca. That's JenniferLinton.ca. And she goes on to say, "I'm returning to school full-time in September to pursue my Master of Fine Arts. I suspect that I'll have even more time to listen during my long commute to school and back. All the best, Jennifer Linton." It's great to hear from you again, Jennifer, and it sounds like you have had your hands full. And next we hear from Susan Argalen, one of our two champion transcription volunteers, who writes, "Good morning. Here's number 162, which was a real delight to transcribe." You'll recall that was the one with Randy Clare on acupuncture, hypnosis, and NLP. So getting back to Susan's letter, she writes, "Here's 162, which was a real delight to describe. I'm afraid I might have been a bit slow with it, as I wanted to spell the Chinese, Japanese, and Indian terms correctly and provide links where I thought it might be helpful. In so doing, I felt so immersed in the healing and martial arts disciplines that Randy Clare described with such depth, wisdom, and experience that my consumption of seaweed salad, seaweed soup, bean sprouts, and kimchi skyrocketed. Randy's way of talking about the unfurling tea leaves while he generously shares tea with his patients was particularly delightful. He subtly and skillfully conveys empathy and makes use of hypnosis, but in addition, the word unfurl might also encourage the patient to release not only tension and physical discomfort, but to unfurl the energy knots of emotional negativity as well. A really outstanding interview, Dr. Dave, and I'm so happy to learn that Joe is enjoying transcribing this material as much as I am. Sayonara for now, Susan." And finally, we hear from Sarah, who writes, Hi, Dr. Dave. I finally had a free moment to listen to the podcast, My Three Shrinks. She's referring to the interview that I did with the three psychiatrists. She says, it was great and really touched on what I seem to experience on daily at work. To preface my thoughts, let me quickly tell you my background so you understand. I have a BA in psychology and an MA and EDS in counseling. Currently, I'm a national certified counselor and am waiting for my LPC application with Pennsylvania to go through. I work in a community mental health facility specializing in parents with mental illness, and on the side, I work in a private practice. I'm also planning on applying to clinical psychology PhD this fall. Hey, good luck with that application. What I enjoyed most about the podcast was how the psychiatrist spoke about how their listeners/readers realize that they are human too. Ironically, I found the psychiatrist to be human, yet still very shrink-wrapped in their own world of psychiatry. While I deeply respect the field of psychiatry, I find many psychiatrists to not have a strong grasp on the other branches of the mental health professions. When the one doctor spoke about not realizing for many years that social workers practice therapy, it hit a chord with me. As a master's level therapist, I find it somewhat difficult to have medical doctors understand my role as well as psychologists who have never worked in the setting with master's level clinicians, counselors, social workers, MFTs, etc. I feel as the world of mental health professionals grows, more and more political problems arise and more duplication of services occurs between psychotherapists/psychiatrists. You could create an entire podcast just on this topic alone. Lastly, I loved your questions about theoretical orientation. I question if the lack of psychological theories taught and explained in medical school is a factor in having psychiatry move away from talk therapy to simply medication management. Thanks for your podcast and allowing me to rant about my thoughts, Sarah. Well, Sarah, thank you for that rant. And of course, I asked those questions because I had similar sorts of perceptions and concerns. So I think that better wrap it up for today. You can send your emails as usual to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. Remember that in addition to emails, you can also leave comments about individual shows in the comments area on the site and leave voicemails on Skype, where my name is ShrinkPod. You're encouraged to leave voice messages on the MyChingo widget on the site and also on my U.S. voicemail phone at 206-337-0622. Thanks again to Dr. Jed Diamond for his insights into irritable male syndrome. And as a nice counterpoint to irritable male syndrome, next week's guest will be Jungian analyst Dr. John Beebe talking about the feminine in film. Until then, this is Dr. Dave saying it's all in your mind.